Where is here, exactly? Said Two Flower, beckoning the luggage and opening its lid. Rincewind looked around. The hall was dark and deserted, its tall, narrow windows walled with ice. He looked down. There was the faint blue line stretching away from his ankle. Now he could see that Two Flower had one too. We're sort of informally dead, he said. It was the best he could manage.
Oh,
Two Flower continued to rummage. Doesn't that worry you?
Well, things tend to work out in the end, don't you think? Anyway, I'm a firm believer in reincarnation. What would you like to come back as?
I don't want to go, said Rincewind firmly. Come on, let's get out of... Oh, no, not that. Two Flower had produced a box from the depths of the luggage. It was large and black and had a handle on one side and a little round window in front and a strap so that Two Flower could put it round his neck, which he did. There was a time when Rincewind had quite liked the iconoscope. He believed, against all experience, that the world was fundamentally understandable and that if he could only equip himself with the right mental toolbox, he could take the back off and see how it worked. He was, of course, dead wrong. The iconoscope didn't take pictures by letting light fall onto specially treated paper, as he had surmised, but by the far simpler method of imprisoning a small demon with a good eye for colour and a speedy hand with a paintbrush. He had been very upset to find that out. "You haven't got time to take pictures," he hissed.
"It won't take long," said Two Flower firmly, and rapped on the side of the box.
A tiny door flew open, and the imp poked his head out.
"Bloody hell,"
it said.
"Where are we?"
"It doesn't matter," said Two Flower. "The clock first, I think."
The demon squinted.
"Poor light,"
he said.
3 bloody years at F8, if you ask me."
He slammed the door shut. A second later, there was the tiny scraping noise of his stool being dragged up to his easel. Rincewind gritted his teeth.
"You don't need to take pictures. You can just remember it," he shouted.
"It's not the same," said Two Flower calmly.
"It's better. It's more real."
"It isn't really. In years to come, when I'm sitting by the fire..."
"You'll be sitting by the fire forever if we don't get out of here."
"Oh, I do hope you're not going."
They both turned. Usabel was standing in the archway, smiling faintly. She held a scythe in one hand, a scythe with a blade of proverbial sharpness. Rincewind tried not to look down at his blue lifeline. A girl holding a scythe shouldn't smile in that unpleasant, knowing and slightly deranged way.
"Daddy seems a little preoccupied at the moment, but I'm sure he wouldn't dream of letting you go off just like that," she added. "Besides, I'd have no one to talk to."
"Who's this?" said Two Flower. "She sort of lives here," mumbled Rincewind. "She's a sort of girl," he added. He grabbed Two Flower's shoulder and tried to shuffle imperceptibly towards the door into the dark, cold garden. It didn't work, largely because Two Flower wasn't the sort of person who went in for nuances of expression and somehow never assumed that anything bad might apply to him.
"Charmed, I'm sure," he said. "Very nice place you have here. Interesting Baroque effect with the bones and skulls."
Isabel smiled. Rincewind thought, "If Death ever does hand over the family business, she'll be better at it than he is. She's bonkers."
"Yes, but we must be going," he said. "I really won't hear of it," she said. "You must stay and tell me all about yourselves. There's plenty of time, and it's so boring here."
She darted sideways and swung the scythe at the shining threads. It screamed through the air like a neutered tomcat and stopped sharply. There was the creak of wood. The luggage had snapped its lid shut on the blade. Two Flower looked up at Rincewind in astonishment, and the wizard, with great deliberation and a certain amount of satisfaction, hit him smartly on the chin. As the little man fell backwards, Rincewind caught him, threw him over a shoulder, and ran. Branches whipped at him in the starlit garden, and small, furry, and probably horrible things scampered away as he pounded desperately along the faint lifeline that shone eerily on the freezing grass. From the building behind him came a shrill scream of disappointment and rage. He cannoned off a tree and sped on. Somewhere there was a path, he remembered. But in this maze of silver light and shadows, tinted now with red, as the terrible new star made its presence felt even in the netherworld, nothing looked right. Anyway, the lifeline appeared to be going in quite the wrong direction. There was the sound of feet behind